movies lately still?
Yeah, you know, I still go to the theater. Like,
what'd you think? Everybody's got an opinion on the Dark Knight, man.
Wait. Why don't you do an intro and we'll start the clock?
No, he's just getting his stuff. I just want to ask him his professional opinion outside of sync. What he thought the Dark Knight Rises, was it good?
How good it was?
Yeah. I mean, the argument is Avengers or Dark Knight really is the argument.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think both are excellent films. Both are great. I really, for my personality and temperament, I suppose I really liked Avengers more. It's just more funny and light and adventurous and, you know, it's kind of joyful and light and vibrant, full of color, you know, and I like Josh Whedon's humor. So funny, you know, he's just so clever. He's such a geek god. I love it.
A geek god. Yeah.
God. I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Firefly and that stuff, you know, I really do. So
that's who did Avengers? I don't believe I knew
that.
Yeah,
he directed it, Josh Whedon, so.
That's way cool, because it makes sense to a certain degree. It's the same idea as Sam Raimi's doing Spider-Man or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He was doing all of that Xena and Hercules kind of campy, over-the-top TV stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked Avengers. You know, it's one of my favorite movies, really. I really love it. And but I liked Dark Knight. I really thought it was excellent. You know?
Okay.
I saw it twice, which is very rare for the big screen. Twice.
Wow. The space got tight, don't need no knife here, we break up fights. Put your good shoes on, get your makeup right. And the ladies in the play so fly, make you wanna go home and wake up your wife. And I like it right, could never hate my life. In fact, I'm quite excited, I get to play tonight. Alright, now listen, Jake, that was fantastic, thank you, sir.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
That's exactly what I wanted to do, too, because I've always wanted to just sit back. I don't know. I wake up in the mornings and I go to IMP Movie Awards and I kind of just marvel over what's in the theaters, what's coming out in the theaters, and the new posters, and how it all like lines up is always just intriguing to me.
Oh, yeah. I love that stuff, you know? And I feel like, you know, I still sometimes sit down and like go, okay, this movie, like this morning, I was just like, okay, there's this ant thing. There's this you know, the person who died and the person who was born today, both are in the same movie, Bug's Life. They're both ants, you know, the queen. And I'm like, that's cool. Maybe it'll connect to something later in the day or tomorrow or something. So I'll put it out and maybe see if it pops or not. It's just interesting by itself. But sort of, I used to do that all day. You know, I would just sit at the computer and show all these associations.
It seems like your life now is definitely more embodied a little bit. I mean, this is all anecdotal because I can, you know, I only see you through the lens of what you put out on the media. But it does seem like you're definitely you're on the computer. Or you're more integrated the two realities, the internet reality and the real world. But the fact that you're using a metaphor about wind and trees is beautiful to me.
Yeah. I think a lot of impact has happened since the beginning of this year when I got an iPhone that really changed my relationship to sync and to the media. Like having a computer basically on me all day has just sort of changed what I want to do. And in a way, it's kind of healed my relationship with my computer. Like, instead of sitting in my room, staring at the screen, and trying to take breaks from that because I'm getting strung out.
Right.
I've kind of been, now you'd think it's worse. I got the computer on me. So now I'm just going to be outside walking around staring at it all the time, which I do. But I'm outside, I'm looking at the world, trying to figure out how can I photograph it or share the feeling of this moment or something. It's more like this organic, harmonious relationship with the computer, it being in my pocket, than me having to come to my room and sit, you know, with just sort of sitting. It's
it seems like that's one of the primary metaphors all the time, is that there's two worlds, and the idea is trying to integrate the two worlds. So like there's the spirit and the material or whatever. So it's fascinating that this is one of the things that's playing out, is how our technology actually started as a separate world, and now
it's merging.
Yeah. And so last year I was all about fighting the technology, because I was afraid somehow that these worlds couldn't somehow come together. Because I was more of, in that strung out place where, and that's not healthy because you're out of balance, but somehow bringing the two together. And so it's interesting.
Yeah. And it's another example of that, I don't know, weird thing where it's like, you think the way out is away from the thing. Okay, the computer is somehow a wonderful tool, but it's also so like demanding of my time, and it's causing me to sit for hours on end in my room. It's unhealthy in all these other ways. I'm just staring at a screen. And you're like, okay, well now we got to go away from it. And it's like, no, actually we got to hit the acceleration button on it, like put it in our pockets and strap it to us, actually it gets better. It's like, it's not like we're stupid or wrong by having invented computers. We just have to, realize its fuller potential, which is sort of happening with the phone, I feel, the smartphone.
So, and that makes the tweeting, so it puts the tweeting into perspective. So you're moving through the universe and then doing the microblogs, and then basically the microblogs over time are like these sedimentary structures where you can go back and actually read the wind of space through the Instagram or the tweets.
Yeah, and I love how it's sort of like each of us is experienced with Twitter and Instagram or the internet is like unique, because you're going to be following a certain bunch of people and things that you're interested in, and because we overlap in so many areas, we're a community, but still your individual experience will be unique, right? And then the things that interest you and that capture your attention are going to be unique to you as well. So they're overlapping, but you're also sort of selecting, and there's this amazing interactive process happening that's informing what is your like online experience every day. And it's like you're seeing this personalized doc of you and everybody around you through the internet and all the things that you're into. And it's just like, it just keeps getting more, the texture just keeps growing. Like I feel more intimately connected to Jennifer and to Jim and to everybody else who's on Instagram sharing their photos. I'm just getting this real like sense of the texture of their day-to-day routine, and that's really informing me about where they're at and just what kind of people they are. And Facebook, all these things still keep doing that and do it in new and interesting ways. It's just like a documentary of all the people I'm into real time as they're living, it's really, I love it. And then that's just part of it. It's crazy.
Well, how do you balance that out with the throwaway kind of concept, as far as, like everybody's basically thrown away their MySpace page or whatever. I mean, the next big thing on the internet mentality, as far as Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, do you feel there's a little bit of non-longevity to all of these wonderful things?
Definitely, but I think that's part of the sort of wind-like nature that we're talking about. It's like flowing through, and you're not holding on to it. It's like it's the spirit that you're interested in. It's not about Twitter or about the blogs or about the videos or whatever. It's that flow that's happening. That so you're not attached to the medium. Or the message, whichever one you associate with being, it's the flow itself that you're into, not the things that are allowing the flow. And it's not like those things are just being, thrown away and disregarded, and we don't see them as like, we don't see where we've come from kind of thing. There's a sacred space for all that stuff. But there's also, a thing about letting go and allowing things to flow.
Well, how about participation in the flow, though? I mean, what do you think about actually writing yourself, you as Mr. Kotzev writing fictional tale or something. I mean, with trying to make your own touch TV show, do you know what I'm saying? Like, just write a story to symbolically represent your, you know, philosophy as far as Sync is concerned.
Yeah, I'm not in that space at this point. Like, if like maybe there's a time to sit down and do these kinds of things. Like, I really feel like I have this event horizon in my mind, and I don't know if it's that self-imposed or whether it's really spiritually there, because it is 2012 and there is something momentous about to unfold, you know, and that thinking further than that is impossible, because it is impossible, because the reality doesn't exist in the same way anymore after that event horizon, or whether it's just that it's a mental block because of the associations I have with 2012. I don't know. But it doesn't matter, because it's going to pass soon. You know, 2012 is we're in it, and it's more than halfway through, and
The event horizon.
We're at the event horizon of realizing, oh, we had a bit of a mania about it, and it's kind of business as usual, but that was interesting. Cool. We went through this thing. Or, okay, it's the real deal, and let's go. Stargate's here, you know, collective weirdness. either way, it's coming, right? And we'll know. But I feel like I can't think about stuff like books or, you know, like really... Even like we were trying to do a Liam Neeson movie, and we might still be doing that, but I know that me and Jim have both sort of, our attention has just been taken by a million other things, and we're not sitting and watching Liam Neeson movies right now.
What do you think about Liam Neeson? Hold on, you've seen Liam Neeson, The Gray, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now I got some questions about this and what you think about it, because I'm really, I can't figure out why the hell they called it The Gray.
Why didn't they call it the den?
Why didn't they call it the den? I mean, that would have made more sense, right?
They aren't gray wolves. Like, they're not, like, that's not the type of wolf.
Do they even mention the word the gray in the movie? Because I heard the word fray, but not gray. And
Isn't it a gray wolf?
It's not a gray wolf. Even the master wolf is a freaking black wolf.
No, but I mean, maybe that's the name, like, not...
Genus or something.
Call the wolf, regardless of the color.
Right.
It's just suspicious, goddammit. And
the gray...
And Liam Neeson, they actually call him... what's his name in that movie? They call him Mr. Almond at one point.
We need to balance it out. You need to go watch Never Cry Wolf. That's your assignment tonight, Will.
Never Cry Wolf.
Yeah, it's a Disney film, and one of our little guys who pops up, it's not Bob Balaban, but it looks like him, and he, I think they cross paths. All right,
I'm digging
it. So American Graffiti has this actor, I don't know his name.
Ottawa. That's a very unusual name. Liam Neeson's name in... The gray is Ottawa, and they say, one guy sits down and he goes, "You're Mr. Almond, right?" And he goes, "Ottawa," like he mispronounces his name.
I mean, that is a very cool sync with the gray aliens and the almond, because that goes together in a few ways, the almond-shaped eyes, and then somebody was telling me, now I don't know if this is true, because I don't remember reading it, but somebody was saying that in the book 2012, the Daniel Pinchbeck one, the Quetzalcoatl, book.
Yeah.
He talks about the almond smell when abductions happen. There's an almond-like smell.
Well, so from my point, think of it this way. So you have all that alien visitor abduction stuff in the gray, but then it felt like a propaganda movie where they're fighting these monsters, the wolves. Supposedly, wolves aren't going to do this to you.
Right.
That this is, like, weird propaganda from, like, a strictly form point of view, that wolves aren't the bad guys. They're actually part of nature, and they have a role in maintaining, like, a balanced ecosystem. And so we're the top predator, and so we're threatened by this natural top predator, and we don't want to share our space with it. So it's just interesting because you know, on the if you approach the alien abduction with like fear, you're going to see the Greys as these monsters that are coming to get you. But if you think of the alien abduction experience as like some kind of like spiritual wind that's blowing through you, and you don't look at it with fear, then perhaps
I get you, but I don't. I mean, personally, what the movie looks like to me is somebody was in Hollywood going or talking about that Jack London book where the dog turns on the guy because they're out in the middle of there's this classic like
but so my kids just watched Jaws.
Archetype. Hold on, let me finish my thought.
But
like
it's
archetype.
The same idea.
It is. It's like the
they
classic.
Don't do that.
Typical.
The sharks don't eat people.
I know, but that's
but
you don't have a story. You don't have a story unless you have a monster. I mean.
But we created the monster. We're the monster.
Well, check this out, though. I mean, like the thing that's fucked up to me is Whitley Strieber is the one who gave us the classic. You know, the iconic gray alien came from his book, Communion. That was like the cultural seed that created this whole 1990s obsession with that gray alien look. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And his first movie was The Wolfen, where this whole – I mean, the movie is about these wolf creatures, like, taking over. Do you know what I'm saying? They're like these predators that are werewolves but not werewolves. It's this. What you're saying is valid because the gray is kind of like.
I'm just saying. What I'm saying is that oftentimes, what we see in art is shadow projection. There are parts of us that we really don't want to integrate because they freak us out, and so we project our own shadow onto something.
The gray, the Strieber's gray, might very well be that though. I mean. It's the whole – he basically says, I don't know if these things really exist in physical or if they're just something that comes out of my head. And it's the whole idea of the puka, the dog is the wolf. And it's this figment of your imagination. That's why, you know, the three main alien archetypes are the rabbit, the wolf, and the owl. That's
sorry,
all.
Jake. We had a bit of a
a lover
tangent.
Squirrel.
It's cute. I like it.
All right. So, anyways, man, I got to get moving. I got to get my day going. It has been an absolute pleasure, Jake. Thanks, man.
Oh yeah, no problem.
And I could feel like the sink coming back in certain ways, where I lose it and it comes back, and I lose it and it comes back, and it's just like, you know, if I want it, I can get it, but if I don't want it and I ignore it, then it doesn't overwhelm my life like it did.
Right. I feel the same way. I'm kind of it tapers. Do you know what I mean? There's definitely waves where it's just like, Jesus, I can't deal with this. And then it like resides to where it's kind of leaving you alone a second. And you don't have to force it or anything, but it's always there. Like if you want to acknowledge it, you can. So it is a form of insanity to a certain extent. I imagine those people who are like freaking psychotic and stuff deal with what we call sync. I mean, this like always seeing connections. Like uncontrollably. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's where it was at for me for a while, to the point where I was ignoring my family and my kids, and it got that bad. But at the same time, it's kind of like a novelty, right?
It is the last novelty, I think. Like, it's just the novelty of novelty. It's just like trying to see novelty in everything, kind of.
Well, once you see it, you don't ever unsee it, but you get immune to its grasp in certain ways, whereas it kind of can consume you when you start, you know, when the fire starts and you start writing and you start looking into things, you just get so blown away by the beauty of it. You can get lost staring at it, you know. But right. I think what killed it for me to that degree, honestly, still was losing Soundless Dawn, losing his videos, and losing him and Jake's collabs and, you know, the blob and all that.
You mean losing his stuff as far as it being taken down for copyright issues, or losing it as he's not doing it anymore?
Yeah, he's moved on.
Oh, both. Well, he says he's doing stuff. He says that he's never going to stop and that he's...
Well, you know, once it's there, it's there. It's rendered. It's on the fucking video player, and I'm waiting for it. You know, I'm not going to hold my breath, but I'm going to be there. You know, if it happens again, it'll be fucking fantastic if we get another dose.
I've often thought about, like, asking Jake and Steve to, like, hand over their passwords to a couple of individuals on YouTube so we can take them all off. Do you know what I mean? Not, like, take them down off of YouTube, but back them up. Like, spend our time, you know, getting them copied and putting them on some kind of other format. I don't know if there is some kind of way to do it on WordPress or something like that. But
I tried talking to Soundless about that. I asked him a couple months ago if I could purchase all of his videos on DVD, and he never responded to me, but I know that there's a few fans of his that have all of his stuff backed up. And I remember reading on some of the forums randomly years ago. I'd have to look for a while to find it again, but you know, a couple people were saying, you know, he was complaining about how his videos were getting ripped off, and he said, you know, I got them all backed up for you, Steve, if you ever need them, and, you know, get in touch with me, blah, blah, blah. So
The thing that I'm interested in is he was doing, like, extended versions on some of his stuff, like, right around the end of 2007 and stuff. He was offering, you know, you could purchase a longer version of the videos he was putting up on YouTube.
And yeah, his original website.
Right, and I wish that I had more, because I only had gotten a couple and I've already lost those, but I want to see more of the extras. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, if he ever got some kind of incentive, I'm sure he would just be all in. But he needs something. I know, I hate to say money, but when it comes to video editing, a lot of those videos, he put like 90 hours into fucking production. You know, that's a long time for anybody to fucking dive head deep into frame after frame of fucking meticulously scripted and fucking snipped things, you know?
Oh, I know. The one that I just did for my little video I did for Andras Jones just took forever, and then you have to go back and correct all the mistakes and clean it up. And Steve's were always pristine. I was wondering, because he used to be able to put them out in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. Well, is it it's an ebb and flow, and, you know, are we waiting for some kind of earthquake? Because in 2008, something happened to a lot of us, and we were all 27 and around that age group. You know, we're all fucking artists. We're all, you know, interchangeable mentally in so many ways. And it's like, okay, we've seen that. And it's like, okay, that's like this pulsar star that has this rotating light that shines every so often. Or was it just like a fucking exploding star and that's it, you know, done deal? That's the question I got. You know, we're growing up, we're having families, we're starting to become a part of the system more and more, desensitized more and more, you know, distracted more and more. But, you know, like even today, I was looking at just having a glance at the sinkhole, just looking at the images on the sidebar and clicking random links and seeing the Manitoba legislative website, Frank Albo's, you know, his website there, and reading the quotation that said that the building was supposed to inspire people to be better and to inspire the city to become better and evolved. But Winnipeg is not that, you know, in the perceptions of the average Canadian, Winnipeg is a hole. It's like the dirtiest fucking shithole in North America as far as Canadians can see, you know, like we, you know, Detroit's pretty bad. So I've heard, and there's shitholes everywhere, but in all of Canada, you know, Jim Sanders is calling it the heart when the rest of Canada is calling it the arse. Like it's like, okay, we get these fucking little explosions of wonderful things and then they fucking die down. Like we get these fireworks and then it's over. And that's what I'm, you know, that's what happened with me in Sync, is it was an explosion and it was cool. It was climactic. It was fucking, there's anticipation because there's going to be another video next week or in 2 weeks, you know, and I missed out on a good portion of the beginning of it. Like I didn't get involved in the blog scene when Steve and the Wrong Way Wizard and Detroitify and Chris Knowles and all those guys got down to business, you know, because at the time I had no fucking inkling.
No,
of
you
what
and
the
I pretty much
about.
We pretty much got on it at the same time. It was at this beginning part of 2008 that you and I both kind of were going strong with it or whatever. But that was like about around the time that both Jake and Steve were tapering off. Do you know what I mean? Like they both kind of like started extending away from it. I mean, even I don't know, man. Oh shit, this stuff's recording. Maybe I should turn it off.
And you know, we're coming to the point where we're going to be integrating cell phones into our bodies. You know, that's very fucking real. Now, where a person can create something that's fantastic, you know, you got to make it digestible and quick, you know, and that's why a lot of people switched over to Twitter, because they just needed it quick. You know, we just want to get to the point.
2 more minutes and I'll be there, filling my empty head with pictures of you bare, a breath to take home with me. Take your oxygen slowly while you breathe, and all the days in between. You're still my drug of choice, the figure of my dreams. And though we wait for now, even through the noise, I feel you somehow. I don't want nobody else. You lift me off of the ground. I want you all to myself. Please don't ever let me down.
Yeah, well, like I told you, I finished that drawing last weekend. That's a big deal for me. It made me feel good. I still feel good just finishing that fucking thing, you know, and now it's like, okay, I put it up on Photoshop and I'm starting to fucking detail it more and more and more. And right now I'm working on another piece based on this new news of the binary star systems. And I'm thinking to myself, I've always ranted and raved about Jupiter and Saturn being stars, you know, and other people have too. But just me in my own fucking room thinking about those things, I come up with my own ideas of them, and then I see them come to life in the media and in the news. And it's like, our mother is the sun, and we came out of the sun as suns, and as we burned off and distilled, we became planets, you know, and Jupiter eventually snuffed out. And now it's just, it's becoming, you know, is it coming towards the sun? Is it going away from the sun? Is it shrinking? Is it growing? Who knows? All I know is hearing about a star system with two suns makes me think that, you know, this center sun is giving birth to that littler sun. And, you know, out of these suns, or out of the sun, it just keeps coming and spiraling out. You know, we're just the smeg that comes off the sun. We're like, you know, in the sun is this fucking cauldron, this boiling and this distilling, and all the, you know, the crystallization comes out as the form of a planet of a certain kind. And, you know, finding out that we're stardust and all these profound thought exercises lead one to create things and get inspiration. So for me to sit down and watch videos right now, I don't derive anything from it. It's not there. Like, I could watch your video aesthetically, it looks good, but in terms of how I connect to it. Like, I even tried with Andre. I was thinking, okay, Nightmare on Elm Street, part five. Part four. I was, you know, where was I when that came out? I remember the poster. I remember seeing it at the video store. And I'm thinking there's something there. Like, if I was to look into Andre and relate his videos to myself and watch your video, there might be that click that I needed to remind me of why that's important. And
well, the reason why I did Andras is because it is like an unknown fucking actor. To me, it's important because, you know, it's so, I listen to so many fucking podcasts and people act like they know what they're talking about. Like, they talk about MK Ultra and they talk about Monarch programming and they talk about this and they talk about that, but they don't really know about any of that stuff. They've only heard about that stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I mean, if you really dig into MK Ultra and you really dig into Monarch programming, you run into dead ends. It's like, not to say that the proof isn't there. The proof is in the pudding. That's for certain. Like, you can look at Katy Perry and you can see all this weird shit, and you can look at this and look at that and look at the other, and you're like, okay, yeah, there's definitely something going on around here. But then they're like, oh, it's just Monarch programming. But then you go and you start, you know, digging into Monarch programming, and you're like, wait a minute. You mean all of this is reliant on one person's testimony? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, well, you have all of these fucking people saying that it's true and this is what it means and everything, but you have no actual proof to back it up. All you're doing is hearsay. Do you know what I'm and that's when it like breaks down for me. But if you go into some unknown actor, I mean, it's easy to say that Katy Perry, Nicki Minaj, all of these people who are obviously like just deluding the youth, do you know what I'm saying, are being controlled.
Yep.
Is it on purpose, or is it just because this is like our natural progression? Like, we get more and more sexual free because of the 1960s or whatever. But if you look at Andras Jones, who is, I mean, he's not that great of an actor, although he is a great mind, in my opinion. I've gotten to know him. I mean, I've spent a lot of conversations on the phone with him, and he helped me. Like, he was like, you're doing this wrong. You're pronouncing this word wrong. You're not doing this right. And he helped me. He was honest to me. Do you know what I'm saying? But his career is of no circumstance. Like, it's movies that are almost impossible to find because they're so up fucking skewer. But if you can watch them all 12 of them or whatever, and you can see that they're all basically the same story, that's something important to me. That's very important to me, because it's like, okay, yeah, you can do this with Leonardo DiCaprio, but can you do it with fucking podunk idiot, not saying that's what Andras is, but if you can do it with like some guy who plays these random fucking, you know, roles, and yet the sync, I think the sync is so strong with Andras is because he's into sync. I mean,
right.
People look at his Radio 8 Ball and write it off as a child's game, which it is. It is. It's a child's game. But so is William S. Burroughs' Cut-Ups. Do you know what I mean? However, it's directly engaging synchronicity. It is directly – it's doing exactly what your post in the sync book does. Do you know what I mean? It's like – or my big fucking elephant. It's like, fuck all of this noise. I want some direct interaction. Do you know what I mean?
And you can get it anywhere. But it's all based on personal novelty. What excites you, what keeps you interested. And when you strike a chord that harmonizes with different consciousnesses, you know, with different mindsets, you know, that's where you got something that's special. When it doesn't appeal to just one group of people and it appeals to multiple you know, the whole spectrum, or even like most of the spectrum, or even a certain large portion of it. You know, that's what Jake was able to do. That's what Soundless was able to do. And it all felt like it was building up a momentum to the point where it's just going to explode and it was going to spill over into pop culture. And it always has been there. And it is there now. And people, like, I go to Reddit a lot, and people are constantly connecting things where, you know, a person writes about how their cat's sick. And it just releases a fury of memes and inside jokes and, you know, all these different things that all connect and relate to each other. People feel so excited to be able to do that in real time, to be able to comment on something and make a witty remark and make a pun, and it's all sync too.
Right.
You know, like, that's
puns by nature are sync. Puns are sync. Because it's that 1.5 meaning you're looking for, not the face value, but what it also means is what you're looking for.
Yeah, and that's what people ultimately want in life. People just want to connect, and they want to feel connected. You know, not everybody wants to be a spectator. Like, sometimes you want to, sometimes you want to be a part of it. So that's why things, popular things like Facebook and blogging, connect with people, because it gives them their place to shine. You know, and that's why Reddit's fantastic. You can get a fucking geek that's on welfare, you know, with his computer in his room, shirt off, fucking eating Cheetos, and he could come up with like the most amazing comment on somebody that's asking for advice about some retarded problem they're having. And, you know, it gives everybody their time to shine without any bias, without any need to purchase anything, without any need to do anything to fit in socially in any way. And that's why the internet's exciting. And that's, you know, sync is there. Everybody is a syncer. Everybody does it in their own way. They're nostalgic and they connect things nostalgically and it excites them. But to be able to document it and inspire, that's what you're trying to do. You want to inspire people and show them, like, you think that's fucking cool, just wait till you start looking at this way, you know. And it's to hear somebody say to you that, wow, I'm really glad you pointed that out, that makes you feel connected yourself. And to have a special knack to be able to do that regularly, fuck, that's just great, you know. That's, if you can keep doing that, cool. If you still got the motivation for it and you got people fucking loving your stuff and that's all you need, you know. But at the same time, there's the monk, the sync monk, who has his own fucking geeketry and his own, you know, his own quirks and he's got his own laboratory and he's eccentric and he does his own thing. He can derive just as much connection and pleasure as anybody else on his own, doing his own thing. You know, like, that's what Mark LeClaire is to me. He's just this fucking scientist who once in a while, you know, communicates this fantastic language that he's discovered and these amazing conspiracy theories that blend into sync. And basically you feel like they're proven, but, you know, at the end of it all, it's just fucking words again. But interesting nonetheless. A lot of the strongest synchronicity comes from the strongly obscure.
It's
like
true.
Very painfully boring things. Like that 80s television show, I still got to get into that. Outer Worlds or whatever the fuck it
Otherworld,
was.
Other World, yeah.
Other World, that one was incredible.
I was thinking about that today because it is. It's freaking insane. But it's so obscure and so crappy that it's ridiculous. But
it's like these ideas are going to come out and they're going to be better looking and they're going to be more intelligent and to the point, and that's what we want to happen. But is it happening? Who knows? You want to go to another level, higher than where you're at now. If you, just using an example, because there's no such thing as any of that shit anyways, you need to totally get in on the magic that me and you have talked about, where your intent is thrown out. And you want something so bad, so badly, you just let it go. And when you make your video and you spend your time and you render it, fucking just put it out there and just let it go. Let go of it. It's like a little fucking sailboat. and you're letting it go out in the ocean, and you're going to let the wind and the water take it wherever the fuck it goes. Or you're throwing a message in a bottle. You know, you might even forget about that. But one day you might get a call. Somebody found the bottle. And you get those little fucking, those little bits of inspiration from those responses. Like even my stupid Clockwork Orange video remix piece of crap that I made that took me no time to make. I just lazily slapped it together because I wanted to kind of put together a concept of a video I wanted to do. And then it's a way over 20,000 hits now. And I get emails from people saying that I made their day, that I broke their ribs from laughing. And I know that the video's stupid and that I don't like it.
20,000? Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and just hearing people say that to me, it makes my day. I could be having the shittiest time. And, you know, nothing's lining up. People are fucking being shitty. I'm feeling shitty. And then I go and I check my email and I made somebody laugh. One fucking person in a 3-month period or whatever. Sometimes it's clusters. That's the whole point, is everything I've made after the Brad Pitt video, everything after that, I tried to just let go. And I found that the stronger I got attached to the stats and the numbers, the less popular it got and the more anxiety it caused me. So, you know, like that's kind of what I think happened with Wilner too, because he tried to change directions and he didn't get the same response. And he wanted people to just kind of change tracks and go with him. But people were like, no, I'm dropping out. I'm done. See you later. You know, you're not the same Wilner you were, and I don't want any part of this. And, you know, part of him got offended, probably, and a part of him didn't give a fuck. You know, and that's what happened with the videos on YouTube. We had this medium where it was public access, and you could make whatever the fuck you wanted, and anybody could view it anywhere. And now that that is controlled and we don't have that ability to have that freedom, we lost that. And, you know, there's the last frontier of freedom that we still have, you know, that's still wild, is the audio form, where we can talk about whatever the fuck we want to, as long as we're paying for it, or, you know, we're on some kind of obscure website that doesn't regulate that shit. But in terms of fucking, you know, trying to do the movie thing, we can't do that anymore. And that was a really cool part of it, and that's gone. So now we got to focus on the audio. So you got Celtic Rebel, who's audio based. You know, he does his little posts and stuff, but he's audio and he can see that. And that's, you know, what you guys do with 42. You're in that last little fucking smidgen of freedom. You're in, you know, we're painted into this corner, like you said. We painted ourselves in this corner because we abused the fucking wonderful freedoms that we had. Somebody fucked it up because they wanted money, right? You know, and that's what happens. Once you want money from those who want money more than you do, then things get all fucky. No, all's good. It's just like, okay, it's a painting and there's texture, like you've said before in the past. It's like, okay, are we looking at an expression of God, God's way of like kind of finger painting around us? So it's not so much that it has a meaning, you know, it does have the obvious meaning, but in terms of any kind of conclusion, you're just going to get appreciation. And if you can't accept that that's where you're going to end up, then, you know, you're either going to get stumped, or you're going to learn to just to appreciate it more than try to figure it out that way. But, you know, like the Jim Carrey thing, when I started to see the vastness of it all and the flow of it all, I was thinking, this is cool, but I'm just going to consult on this one now because I don't even have the capacitors in my brain to be able to retain any kind of a consistent flow with this. It's like, okay, this is cool, check that out. This is cool, check that out. But to try to fucking come to any conclusions, that's where I want to go, but it's not going to happen. Because there's that question. Are you appreciating art, or are you appreciating nonfiction? Is it nonfiction? Does it have some kind of scientific something to it?
Well, you know, in my opinion, what I've learned from Andras is that you can predict And once you can predict, then it's scientific. I mean,
there you go.
Once you can sit there and say, I'm expecting a mirror.
Yeah, well, you're just, it's kind of like Philip K. Dick experiencing being his father, like becoming his father and hallucinating. Well, maybe not hallucinating, but teleporting into becoming his father's consciousness and being his consciousness at the same time, aware and looking through the eyes of his father, acting out the motions. That's kind of PKD's, like, you know, he's making it exciting and he's kind of exaggerating to a certain degree just for the sake of trying to explain what the hell he is seeing and feeling.
That would be a total dream. Because even if you show like a 2-minute video on fucking Jim Carrey, you got people. All you have to do is show 23s. Do you know what I mean? Like, Jim Carrey has a lot of shit to answer for. Like, it's like, all right, motherfucker, we know you know some shit. There's no way you can deny it. Like, we know.
Exactly. And you've been too, he's too, you know, he's too, he won't go there because he's got this reputation and he's got a whole flood of people telling him what he needs to do still.
But it's insane.
You know, if he were to know, you know, how special the stuff he does in relation to even as far as much as he knows, just to hear that and then to be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, since you mentioned that, we already knew that. Here's a fucking segment. What? It'd be like, you know, on a talk show and here's your long lost brother that you never thought you'd see again, and they put him up
another,
on a video monitor.
I think you saw it on Facebook. What we were talking on Always Record, there's another scene out there with him. He's like, Illuminati much? where it's another eye in a pyramid.
Oh,
you're like, quit fucking with us. Like, really, dude, quit fucking with us. Like, you've been doing this for too long. Like, just
he is a Discordian Pope, no doubt about it.
No, there's no doubt. But look, man, I gotta pee and I gotta go to bed. It's midnight.
Alright, man, thanks for the shot.
And all the days in between, you're still my drug of choice, the figure of my dream.
Okay.
I don't want nobody else.
You're not really quite 42 minutes, but you're close enough.
No, I can make it. Anyways, though.
I can make it.
Add some music or something.
But, Joe, you are planning on being in the Sync Book 2, is this correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And what are you going to point out? What are you doing it on?
You want the quick explanation or the
medium? Oh, yeah,
medium?
Don't let all your, you know, cats out of the bag, but...
Well, we'll have you back on after we've read your piece.
Okay.
And would you prefer us to...
Well, no, just ask him a little touch to keep people in touch.
I know. I'm just, like, I'm imagining, you know, we should have you on, like, 2 times. You know, we'll have you on before the book comes out and then after the book comes out. And
yeah, I mean, whatever you guys want to do, that's fine with me. Yeah, I'll just give you a quick touch on it. I haven't, you know, written about or made any movies about any of this stuff because it's my favorite issue, and it's about autotune.
Well, so that comes back to something that I was thinking about. So I was mentioning this book called Childhood's End, where it's a science fiction book where the guy kind of depicts your ascension that you're talking about, where as the kids figure out their telepathic abilities and then being able to manifest new realities as they think it, you know, eventually they tear apart the earth essentially and blast off.
Right.
And this is where Houses of the Holy, that Led Zeppelin album, was the cover of that was inspired by kind of like the ascension moment where you have these kids on these rocks where they're figuring out how to be gods essentially.
I see.
But I mean, sorry to to sidetrack you, but it seems like I've been kind of weirded out and obsessed with like pop music and Lady Gaga and how we're slowly interfacing with the machines that we use. And autotune definitely is an example of this. So tell us about it.
Well, I'm dabbling in autotune from this angle, which is that if pop culture is a reflection of what's happening with humanity, then look no further than autotune, which is tuning in. You know, autotune is a electronic device or program that takes things that are out of tune and brings them in tune. And essentially, you could look at that as what we're doing. You know, we're taking out of tune people and we're bringing them in tune. And so autotune is just swamped in strange synchronicities. You know, it was initially produced by a company called Jupiter Systems. Obviously, you two can appreciate the significance of that. But the company then changed their name to Antares. And Antares is obviously the star at the heart of Scorpio, pointing to the center of galactic center. And I'm sure you guys have heard the theories of, you know, some sort of energy emanating from galactic center that's influencing our ascension, which who knows if that's true. But, you know, autotune has all kinds of themes of like evolution and entraining of the heart. Their logo is actually a man with a wave imposed over his heart. So if you think of, you know, the tuning in of our hearts and our souls, and the word autotune actually is the word cartoon, if you think about it. Auto means car, and tune is obviously a variation of tune like cartoon. So in that sense, it also becomes very strange. But my favorite thing about autotune is this, is that if autotune represents our ascension or our tuning in from a state of being out of tune, then essentially we're entering this land of Oz or land of cartoons, land of enlightenment, and land of the dead, if you're following me here. And autotune was first released by, the first time it hit the public was with Cher. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Cher released it in a song called Life After Love.
Do you believe in life after love?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh,
that was beautiful. you don't need autotune. And second of all, Life After Love is obviously a play on the phrase life after death. And it basically fuses together the term love and death. So, and that was the first time autotune came out. So you can see how the fusing of love and death brings us to this theme of entering enlightenment by tuning into love. And that's essentially, you know, how I view love is the tuning out of fear and the changing of your vibrational frequencies to one of love. You know, that's what autotune is.
Okay, so I've heard so many people talk shit about autotune, how it's crap and how it's like teaching us to be. Do you know what I'm saying? Like it's refreshing to hear someone say something positive.
Well, in my mind, everything is beautiful, and you know, autotune is just another thing, so it's beautiful. But autotune is like the color pink. You know, everybody hates pink, and it's not cool, or it's cool to be a contrarian and hate pink. But man, autotune's amazing. Nobody says anything bad about, you know, musical technology that adds echoes to people's voices, or that simulates drums, or that adds distortion to guitars. Why is there anything wrong with adding or correcting pitch on a voice?
Wonderful.
So, thank you.
Wonderful. So if they wanted to put a computer chip in you, you'd be fine with it?
Well, that's a whole other topic.
But do you think that we will essentially, I mean, I was listening to Katza talk about this earlier, about meshing with computers and stuff. Are you for adding your smartphone into your eyeball and shit like that? I mean, is this where we're headed?
I think you have to analyze it on a case-by-case basis, but it's certainly, it's certainly tempting, you know? It would be tough to see everyone embracing this type of technology and me not, but I generally feel...
This is one way to become the Superman.
Yeah, I think so.
I just don't know if it's an authentic way or not. That's my trepidation.
See, if you look at individuals like Philip K. Dick and said that, they basically said it's going to happen anyways. I mean, it's already happened. That's the whole... There's a real fine line between...
We're cyborgs already. I mean, people walk around with their cyclopean iPhone eye looking at the world.
Well, a big part of you is it exists in the digital world. I mean, if computers were to shut down by some sort of EMP shockwave, I mean, a big part of me would die with it, you know? A large portion of my personality, my skills, my time, and my memories is all, you know, integrated with electronics. So in that sense, we are cyborgs.
But then there's the dark side of this, too, is that perhaps, you know, the apocalyptic winds, that the digital crash is inevitable also, and that then you have people like Jim and Jake ushering in the same type of technology, but plant-based somehow, that the computers are the training wheels for what's coming, which is no nets, no guide wires.
Right, right.
We're doing it all with our minds, which is interesting.
I mean, I think it's exciting. I think there's another interesting angle, which is that, to me, death represents a great spiritual journey. And I think that integration with machines to the point where we are, in some sense, immortal, would essentially leave us trapped in this anti-spiritual prison that we're kind of in right now, you know? You know, sometimes I like to believe that when someone reaches the point where they're ready to ascend, they will then pass on. So in that sense, I think that maybe technology allowing us to be immortal would ultimately, you know, destroy our spiritual growth. Who knows?
Warriors of media, those of us who see poetry in everything that man has produced.
Warriors of media.
I'm watching the Carl Sagan Travel at the Speed of Light, where the guy's on the scooter.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Where he goes fast and it shows him turn blue, and then when he passes you, he turns red because of the light shift and everything.
Yeah, you'll see the tunnel in a minute.
Well, he says that like the whole thing becomes a tunnel. Like the faster he goes, it tapers off.
Yeah.
But see, I've been dealing with a lot of this gray stuff, and also this whole other sync thread that I don't want to get into that circles around Montauk. But it all has to do with like the ability to open up a wormhole with your head or with your brain. To once you supposedly, if you do it with a wormhole with a distance, right, then it's automatically time travel, because all time is the measurement of an object through space, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So if you open up in half that space, like you walk through here and you don't even go, it's essentially time travel. So the whole line of thinking is once you time travel, then teleportation is possible as well. It's like the same exact thing.
Yes, I see.
And so, Terrence McKenna said that that's what 2012 was. Maybe that during 2012 is when we get the time travel and stuff. So I don't know whether or not to think of time travel as necessarily existing, like it's true, or is it somehow it's like code for our brains to become enlightened to the fact that we're always now or whatever. Like I'm not. Do you get what I'm saying? Like it's some kind of Zen koan.
Yeah, I'm right on board. Like if you allow me to elaborate, sometimes I like to think of time travel as this. Like okay, I could go to the grocery store right now and come back in 20 minutes. Or I could just stay here. And staying here is me doing a Zen act of being content. And by that means, I gain those 20 minutes. I sit here. I do nothing. And you could look at that as time travel. And it was made possible because of my spiritual ability to relax, chill out, and be content.
On the other hand, if this isn't intentional, yet somehow intelligently designed, then that means that somehow Christopher Lloyd was a participant in something that happened both at the end of his career and at the beginning of his career. So it's essentially time traveling at the same. it's the breaking up of the understanding of time is like you are not in time. Like you're not in the past or the present, but you're somehow a participant subconsciously in the whole effort. Does that make sense? So what happens at the end of your life directly relates to your birth.
Mm. You said something that Philip Dick said once, Will, about the idea that he was a process or something to that effect?
Process?
Well, so the thing that I'm thinking about is how, from a psychological standpoint, our ego is definitely a finite thing that moves through linear time and history is a straight line.
Right.
But our spirits aren't necessarily, and even our larger self, not just our ego, but our larger actualized self.
So Philip K. Dick associated it to himself as well. And Radio Free Avermouth, which is just basically Valis Part 1, he wakes up in the middle of the night to see himself standing in the corner. And he wakes up, and because he was German taught, he goes, "It's me" in German. "It's me," or "that's me." Whatever, what would that be, Douglas? Like, "that's me," or "it's me," or "look, it's me." Ich bin, or, come on, Douglas.
You put me on the spot.
You need Google Chrome, know. Will.
No, he's...
Es ist mir. Es ist mir.
Okay.
Except don't say it like you're Italian.
Okay, so anyways, the whole point is that it's the same thing. The higher self is the concept of the pooka as well, or the daemon. The daemon and the pooka are the same thing, usually represented by a rabbit or a white rabbit. And basically, that's why Jimmy Stewart is so important, because that's black and white without color, right? And he's in both Harvey, where he has this 6-foot rabbit friend who isn't there, and he's also in A Wonderful Life. Those are the two main things that he's known for. And A Wonderful Life deals with the Holy Guardian Angel, which is the esoteric or the magician's concept of the higher self. The one who – it's the Holy Guardian. That's what's really important, because even then that puka symbolism was coming through in black and white. And now it's continuing. It's even ramping up, in my opinion. It seems like it is designed around 2012. So what do you think about 2012 December? I mean, we're getting pretty close, Joe. What's going on?
We are, man.
What's going on? Is this World War III? What the fuck?
You know, it's strange that as we get close, I feel more of a sense of relaxation about it, which to me makes sense because, you know, the ascension is about becoming calm and relaxed and not being afraid. And I don't feel a sense of fear regarding it. And I think that that's appropriate, you know. So, but that doesn't mean that I don't think something crazy will happen. I'm pretty sure something will. I think something on the economic end will happen. I think there will be some crazy economic upheaval.
Have you ever heard of the relationship to Oz and the economic?
Well, Will, my video was supposed to be 20 minutes long, but I cut out the whole section with it related to money.
Right.
I believe that you know, the Wizard of Oz has such a profound effect on our psyche because money really has something to do with our spiritual enslavement. And, you know, obviously the Wizard of Oz was written as an allegory for, like, monetary principles. And, you know, the destruction of the World Trade Center is 9/11. You know, World Trade Center obviously entrained so powerfully with money and transaction and bartering. So there's definitely something going on with money and gold and even the pyramid on the dollar and all the entrainment with Oz. And who knows, man?
Who knows, man?
Who knows?
Wow. Okay. Let's... Hey.
Man, I got to bring something up. I got to tell somebody this story, man. I'm sure you guys have had this kind of stuff happen. I was watching that movie, The Dictator. You guys ever seen that?
No, that's the new one. I know what it is, though. It's the comedy with that one dude who's...
Sacha Baron Cohen,
man. I was watching that yesterday with my brother, and suddenly Sacha Baron Cohen mentions Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And I was just like, I should tell my brother, like, watch for some sync stuff, because he just said Who Framed Roger Rabbit, so just watch out. But I didn't. I should have, though. Like, the next scene... Sacha Baron Cohen jumps in a helicopter and flies towards One World Trade and starts talking about 9/11 and crashing into the World Trade Center. just stuff like that just makes me like, man, this stuff is real. Yeah. Like all this sync stuff.
Yeah, but it is there is a fine balance, and I have made movies before, so I know the relationship to what actually is there and what you present. There's two different things.
No question.
But it's because there's a very personal thing about it. I mean, there's been times where it's like I'm sitting in the living room with my wife in one arm, my kids are playing around, and you see this incredible, like, this is insane. This should not be in this movie. why the fuck is this in this movie? Like, yes. Does anybody else see this? And you have to, like, keep your calm and keep your cool because you're, like, going out of your damn mind.
No question, Will. I mean, I'll give you an example. I was watching this ridiculous movie called, Baby Geniuses. You guys ever seen Baby Geniuses?
Uh-uh.
Well, anyway, needless to say,
Bruce Willis or Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, that's a different one. That's a baby like Schwarzenegger or something. I don't know. But anyways, Christopher Lloyd was in First Baby Geniuses. So I was watching the second one, and they drive a car into the Hollywood sign, and I rewound it, and like in the scene before that, for no reason, I was just like, "There's no fucking reason this should be." Oh, sorry, my fault. I was like, there's no reason this should be happening right now. But,
let him slide, homie. Let him go.
You can bleep that out. No, I was like, there's no reason this should be...
We cuss here all the time. Feel free.
Okay. I don't cuss. See, I cuss.
Well, he can't do it because he's talking about babies. He feels upset. You know, Kathleen Turner is in that movie. So it's Christopher Lloyd. It's two of the individuals from Roger Rabbit.
And she's in Roger Rabbit?
Kathleen Turner is Jessica Rabbit.
Man, okay. Well, this is... Look, man, this is nuts. So they drive into the Hollywood sign. They drive into this Hollywood sign, and I'm like, what is going on here? Because in the scene before, for no apparent reason, it has nothing to do with the story, nothing. The main character picks up a white rabbit.
Shut up.
I swear. And I was just blown away. I was like, is anybody else seeing this? Like, is anyone connecting with this? Like, why? Why does he pick up this rabbit? It has nothing to do with the plot. It's never seen again. It's unbelievable.
And she's with both, you know, Kathleen Turner's, one of her main things that got her famous was this Francis Ford Coppola movie called Peggy Sue Gets Married, where she time travels.
Oh, man.
It's a good one.
It is.
Jim Carrey's in that.
Jim Carrey is in that. That's why I watched it.
Okay.
Guys, tell me Tosh.0 doesn't look like Jim Carrey.
I never thought it's the way he acts. Like anybody who overacts looks like Jim Carrey. That's just
very true.
That's fucked up though. I've never heard of this Baby Geniuses. The parents are Christopher Lloyd and Kathleen Turner. So this Baby Jesus or Baby Jesus, I didn't mean to say that, but that's what I just said. So this Baby Jesus picks up the white rabbit.
Yeah, I like it, man. I like it.
All right, you must be getting tired, homie.
I got to get to bed, too, but I have to say that you know, you missed a portion of the beginning of your video by not saying Rihanna.
I saw you wrote that. Good call. Have you been on a Rihanna kick? Is that why?
Yeah, he's been on it for years.
No, I mean, so it resonates. I didn't pick her. She picked okay?
She picked you, man, of course.
I'm writing a story. I'm at the crossroads. There she is. She's at my dog park. And I'm like, why are you at my dog park? And she's like, no, why are you at your dog park?
Yes, absolutely. Right. We've all been there, Doug. It's okay. Hey, Doug, do you mind if I give you some semi-homework?
Sure.
Go watch the movie Bull God of the Bible.
Ghoul God of the Bible.
Bull. No, Bull. Bull, like Chicago Bull.
Like Joe here, who used to be a Chicago Bull. So, yes, man, you got to get a job with the Nuggies, man. You got to get your ass out here. You got to get your ass out here and play for the Nuggets, my man.
I would love to. That would be great. But anyway, sorry. Your Rihanna kick, Bull God of the Bible. You'll see all about her.
Really?
Yeah, she's in it. It's awesome. One of the craziest videos I've ever seen.
Alright, Joe, I have your permission to use any and all of this.
Yeah, any and all of it. Pop, 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 pop
Bye.